This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers.
Retire.
Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, great to have you with us on this Monday. John Griffin at 1:35. Today we'll talk Bucknell basketball. It is March. And we'll get into a variety of things today. This opening half hour brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, light, business, boat, motorcycle, RV, whatever it may be. Great people at Purdy Insurance will make sure you are fully covered and save you money. It's all at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. All right, as we move on here from the Sunbury Motors Studio, first of all, Todd, happy Monday to you.
And back to you. Have a good trip to Minneapolis.
We're back. The meal was great.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like we'll talk about the game in a minute because there's actually a list of things I want to get to, and I'll get to the game in a little bit, and then we'll talk to John as well. Rough weekend because of three passings. Yeah. Ed Ott. When Joe Putnam and I went up to the hot stove dinner in Williamsport, it was Chris Carlin, Tim Kirchen, Kent Culvey, and Ed Ott was supposed to be there as well, and Ed couldn't be there because he was ill. Like, okay. Kind of made you sit back and say, okay, that's not a good sign. So was I surprised that this happened? No, because after going to the hot stove dinner, it was something that you thought was a possibility. How about that? Adam Muncy, right? Backyard guy. Played nearly 600 games in his Major League Baseball career. Career year was the year that they won. And by the way, Jason Kelce has announced his retirement. Okay. But the year the Pirates won the World Series, he drove in a career-high 51 runs. This guy was tough, hard-nosed. You want to go into the plate? He'll block it. Can't do it today, but back then you could. You want to run into him. Handled the pitching staff and put together a nice career. Then ended up coaching after that. Now, Steve Nicosia was the guy behind the plate when the Pirates won Game 7 in 1979, but Ed Ott was critical to that team. He played in, I think, like 117 games that year. I mean, so he was the primary guy behind the plate. And so he passed away at 72. Also at 72, Chris Mortensen. Peter King wrote his final column today for Football Morning in America, and in the column he had mentioned that he had spoken to Chris Mortensen last week, and he said he sounded good, so he was surprised. Now, we know Chris Mortensen has been battling cancer such a long period of time. But Peter said in his column today, when he talked to him, that his voice sounded strong and he was in great spirits. Okay. I mean, wow. So, I mean, they were kind of, it sounded like Peter was taken aback that he had passed away. Never met him. Never met him. Don't think I was in the same room with him. Maybe I was at Super Bowl Media Day once or something, but I never saw him. So I don't know personally anything about him except what I've read about him. And everybody has been writing and saying the same thing. not only a great pros pro, but just a great down-to-earth person. And no ego. You know, brought in Adam Schefter, right, to, quote, share and be a part of what was going on. You have sometimes in this business, and I know you'll be surprised by this, Todd, petty egos. The vast majority of people aren't like that, but you have some, okay? There's some out there. That's not this guy. And think back to all the years that he worked primarily in Atlanta before going to ESPN. ESPN, and as Peter King had talked about, had wrote about this in his column about the Boston Globe. And it's funny, reading Peter's column, that was me at the same age, same time, same hometown. And I remember going to college. And I'd go home, and then I would come back, and I'd bring the Sunday Boston Globe. And I'd be sitting there on a Monday in the Commons in Wilkes-Barre. And they would say, well, what are you doing? I said, well, this is great. The Boston Globe has got a full page of basketball, full page of hockey, full page of baseball, full page of football. And a couple of people were laughing. I said, what's so funny? I said, I got a full page of notes here I'm reading from some of the best writers in the country. They're making me better informed. I said, I don't get what's so fun. I couldn't believe people laughed at that. I said, I got a full page of this on every team in the league. It was Peter Gammons. It was Will McDonough. Okay? It was Kevin DuPont. It was Peter May. Right? All connected in. And Peter's talked about the influence of Will McDonough, talked about the influence of Peter Gammons. And absolutely, I can see it because, you know, look, that's what, quote, we grew up with. You know, I'd read the Sunday Boston Globe, the Sunday Hartford Courant, things like that. I mean, you know, I wanted to be better informed. I wanted to know what I was talking about. And ESPN then made the big move where they were doing highlights, and, of course, games. Well, they wanted to be the information source. And so the first person they hired in 1988 as the information source was Peter Gammons. And Peter Gammons remarkably connected with every team in Major League Baseball. And that was 88. The next person they hired, and I want to say it was like 91 maybe, 90 or 91, I think it was 91, was Chris Mortensen, because they wanted to do the same thing with the NFL, and he was the perfect hire. But now you're watching TV, and Peter Gammons is giving you insight inside. Chris Mortensen's giving you insight inside. And Mortensen was a great hire for ESPN. All the information he passed along to the viewership all the time, it was like having that Sunday paper. Except the Sunday paper was in the form of a person talking to you about it on camera. And that was Chris Mortensen. And then in 2009, he brought Adam Schefter in because he didn't care about sharing time, spotlight, or anything like that. That's not the way he was, to his great credit. And then there's Andy Russell. And, of course, you know Roger Haddon and Andy Russell were very close. Fritz Heinemann. Everything that Andy and Cindy Russell did for and have done for Selins Grove. And Fritz was a big part of that. And, of course, Jack Ham. Jack Ham will tell you that the mental side of the game, Andy Russell did wonders for Jack, understanding the mental side of the game, the ability to pick up that extra step here or there because you see it and believe it. And Andy's influence on Jack, and Andy and I have talked, Jack and I have talked about it many times about that. And I'll give you two Andy Russell stories. Okay. One that Andy himself told on the show, but one that had been told to me. Back in the 60s, the NFL, before the draft, would send out a questionnaire. And Andy was a terrific player at Missouri. Running back, linebacker, terrific player. But evidently, his dad did not want him to play in the NFL. Now, back in the 60s, playing in the NFL meant, hey, look, you had to get part-time jobs. It couldn't be a full-time job. I mean, it's just the way it was. Well, every team in the NFL sent out a questionnaire. And one of them is, if, you know, basically, you know, if drafted, will you play for us? Or do you want to be considered for the draft or something like that? Andy Russell's dad did not want him to play in the NFL. Okay. So every time it got there, it got to that box, he checked no. Do you want to know why the Steelers drafted him, Todd?
I feel like I should know this, but I don't.
They're the only team in the NFL that didn't send the questionnaire. They didn't know. He was like, hey, yeah. So he ends up going to the Steelers. And, of course, the Steelers are bad. Now the story that he told us on the air. When Chuck Noll passed away, we had Andy on the show. And so on the show, Chuck Noll comes in. And of the entire roster, Chuck Noll keeps five guys. According to what Andy said, only five guys. He's one of the five. That's it. Five guys. They get into training camp. And Chuck Noll pulls Andy aside and he says, look, I need you to move your foot. I think it was like 6 inches or something. I need you to move your foot 6 inches. And Andy says, Steve, I'm looking at him. I'm like, what the heck? What the heck difference does that make? 5, 6 inches? Well, move my foot? Am I stand move? He says, look at him. I'm like, what the heck? He says, but look, he only kept five guys. I better listen to what the guy's telling me to do because it may be down to four guys, right, that he kept. So he moves his foot, does what Noll tells him. He says, and I couldn't believe it. He said, it made a tremendous difference. He said, I'm like, okay, I get it. He's a part of, Andy's it's significantly older than Jack. He's 7 years older. And he was, that linebacking core was Lambert, Ham, and Russell for the first two Super Bowls. Oh, good gracious. Are you kidding me? There aren't going to be many better trios than that in the history of the game. As a trio, in the history of the game. Ham, Lambert, and Russell. And then Andy retired, then the next two were one after that. But, yeah, three huge losses over the weekend. And then Jason Kelce announced today he's retiring after 13 years. That's not a surprise. Then there's the Wheeler contract with the Phillies, 3 years, $126 million. Wow. It's always hard talking about loss. It's always hard talking about loss. Where you reminisce about somebody because you ache so much for them to still be sitting across from you and have them tell you the story instead of you telling the stories and repeating it from them. It's hard. We will come back more in a moment. This half hour brought to you by Purdy Insurance here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. For the most part, a great weekend for Penn State athletics. Let's give you one example of that, and that is the Penn State men's lacrosse team, down 9-2 to Yale at halftime, rallied and won. Wow. Wow. I mean, do you know how well you have to play? How many face-offs you have to win? How you have to convert? How many times you have to go out and make, I mean, at both ends of the field, make things happen? Very impressive. Very impressive. So, yeah. That was a great win for them. The women's ice hockey team won the CHA championship. Great defense, timely goal, the whole thing, goalkeeping great. Jeff Campersall's a terrific coach. He has done a great job with this group all the way through. Look, it's the program's still in its infancy. They're in the NCAAs again. A great championship. They won the CHA again. They get an automatic bid to the NCAAs. The Lady Lion basketball team, they needed wins down the stretch. They had lost six in a row. They won at Purdue. They then won yesterday. A total blowout against Minnesota on Senior Day. So now they go into the Big Ten tournament. You feel like they're in the NCAAs right now. One win in the Big Ten tournament, I think, solidifies it, and that would be a great moment for them. You look at somebody like McKenna Marisa, who has been in this program all these years, and she has not been. And so you think about somebody like that, and that's great. That they can get themselves to that spot and in the NCAAs. I mean, I feel like they're in now. One more win in the Big Ten tournament, I think, would solidify it. That's just a personal opinion. I've not sat there and looked at the analytics and things like that. I haven't bothered doing that. As to what it says, what it doesn't say, I don't know. But, yeah. As for the men's basketball team, the last 5 minutes of the first half is the tail of the game. You're up 23, and the last 5 minutes they scored 1 point. One? Live ball turnovers. Okay? You're better off dropping the ball out of bounds than you are giving up a live ball turnover. You're better off doing that. Let's just drop the ball out of bounds than having a live ball turnover. And they had a series of live ball turnovers. Just got sloppy with it. It opened the door. That's a hard way to play. And when you do that, you open the window of opportunity. To the opponent trying to come back. And that's exactly what they did. They gave him the window of opportunity. And then at the end, I mean, they had a shot. But it's just, that's twice now they play Minnesota. And it's like we went to the same movie twice.
Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by NIL Game Changers, Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, and Brewers Outlet. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And this half hour brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online, sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, the best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee. Great service department that backs it up every step of the way. at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Time now for the Patriot League tournament coming up Thursday. It'll be Bucknell at American. Joining us, the head coach of Bucknell, John Griffin. John, welcome back to the show. Great to have you with us.
Thanks, Steve. Great to be with you. And, it's wild how fast the season has seemingly gone.
Three consecutive wins. What are the common threads that you've seen in each of these three wins?
The common thread has been poise. I think that what I'm seeing with our team is a general confidence in one another. You can see it on the floor from body language. I think we spoke after losing a game to Holy Cross, and one of the things that was very apparent in that loss was just the dejected body language that I saw a little too often. I think that shifted a little bit to much more of a poised locker room where every possession is its own entity. So I see a group that's living in the moment, and I see a group that's concentrating on improving themselves individually and collectively. At this time of year, that's just critical.
You just brought up something in that answer about each possession is its own entity, which you and I both know at this time of the year is more critical than ever. It's one thing if John Griffin knows. It's one thing if Steve Jones knows. It's another thing if you've got to hold people in the locker room that are playing the game know it.
That's right.
That's always the key to it. Are there a couple of voices in there that get it, understand it, and can articulate it beyond your voice to the other players?
Yeah, that's become a little bit of an impactful factor for the last couple weeks. We have three seniors that are, you know, towards the end of their career here, they're definitely going to start to vocalize a little bit more what they think could be impactful as it relates to winning. But they're all kind of experiencing how to win together. There's 10 of the 14 players in the locker room were here last year. And at this stage last year, they were on the outside looking in a couple of different ways, and really it's just the ball didn't bounce their way throughout the course of the Patriot League play. But what happens is talked about this a couple times. You're learning to win, and in learning to win, you have to experience some adversity so that these lessons can be a little bit, they're not so much talking down to people, you're collaborating with them so the whole group can elevate itself. So what I've seen is just a group that's just continuously willing to listen and apply. And it's a really unique attribute of this group, being that, I don't know these individuals. I haven't known them for very long. And they've been so open-minded and trusting, and right now what I can tell you is they're very confident in each other, and they're very confident in our approach to the game on both offense and defense. So,
are you seeing a cohesion at both ends of the floor where practice is paying off and they instinctively know where they have to be most of the time in those situations?
Yeah. What I'm seeing is, I guess the word would be cohesion. I'm seeing a group of individuals that are trusting one another. Even when that word poise, it really shows itself in the moment where there's no bad body language. The next play is the most important play, and you continue kind of fighting through that mentality of a 4 minute or a 12 point shot or a 4 minute run. The game doesn't work like that. But if you don't have the experience in being in those games and then winning those games, you might feel like there are 12 point shots and there are not. So that's really what I'm seeing. And I'm seeing a group that comes to practice. They want to get better. They work hard at practice. They are very competitive at practice. And at this stage in the year, when you have a group that has that type of mentality, they're putting themselves in a position to be successful.
All right. We get to this time of the year, and this is what I always call the trust time of the year. You can tell down the stretch and into the tournament which players coaches trust, because you will see a rotation get more condensed. Down the stretch, you were primarily playing nine guys over and over again. What does that tell us about your trust level in the nine guys that you're putting on the floor consistently? Because that hasn't really changed for you unless it was necessitated by injury.
Yeah, no, it hasn't. And I trust, honestly, we have so 14 players on our team. I trust them all. I mean, we play Lafayette. I started our non-scholarship senior who has not played at all. And, you know, I trust him. You know, I put him out there for 2.5 minutes, and I didn't even blink, and that's because I trust them all. I think that I have a unique group that cares about one another, and again, they have this attitude of a willingness to accept the role and learn and be the best within it. So I do trust, and part of that trust has been built, Steve, because of injuries. There's been players that have been thrust into huge minute roles, and they're learning through adversity and through successes how to be consistent producers and how to help us win basketball games. And we hit a little bit of a rough patch, but I didn't feel, and the staff didn't feel like the results hurt the attitude of this group, and that's the reason that we currently, you know, have won three in a row, quite frankly.
I played American twice, including down there, and down there went to overtime, which meant a possession somewhere in there swung their way, did not swing your way. What kind of confidence does that give your team because you went down there toe-to-toe with them, and you ended up with the same conference record?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we lost three overtime games in the conference play, and had one of them, the ball bounced our way, we would have been in second place. Sole second place finisher. Unfortunately, that's the way the ball bounced, and I wouldn't change it for anything, because it's put us in the growth mindset and where we are right now, competitively speaking. So, you know what? It's a new season, and we'll learn, of course, and use the previous two games in part of. We're a different team than when we played them a month ago.
Yeah,
We had some injuries at that point. We're a different team than when we played them 2 months ago. And every step of the way, you know, you grow, and some teams' process moves faster than other teams. And so at this time of the year, my experience as a player and my experience as a coach is ultimately you have to be the best version of yourself. And you really don't want to get overly distracted with your opponent, because there's no magic wand. You have to play. You have to play the game. You have to be on offense. You got to be on defense. You got to trust one another. There's going to be possessions that are pretty sloppy and ugly on offense, and the players on the floor are going to have enough confidence to keep themselves organized and go out there and play as if you're in the playground. And you know, that's what you're going to see at this time of the year. And there's got to be a physicality as well. You have to rebound and you have to defend.
Look, this might be a better question from when the season's over with and you and I do a retrospective, but I'll ask it now, and then we can revisit it later. Any subtle adjustments by you as a coach as the season has gone along? Just subtle here and there as to how you approach certain things, this being your first time through?
Yeah, I would say that as the season has progressed, I've less of a play caller and allowed a little bit more of playmaking and been a little bit more entrusting. And you know, I think during our losing skid right there, I think you know internally what we were seeing is the players trying to navigate that a little bit, figure out how to still be offensively anyway, still be aggressive and get quality shots without a play leading to that shot. And I probably would have been a little bit more open-minded to that idea earlier. I would say maybe injuries contributed to the consistent amount of play calling that I did game in and game out. But that's really where there's been the most shift for me. And, you know, it's been through trial and error. It's been through trial and error. I'm very open about my learning curve with this, and I feel very comfortable right now where I sit and the mentality and the connection that I have with the players and their trust.
We can see it. The other element is you're a competitor. You know, you're from a family of competitors, so you hate to lose. I mean, hate it. Okay?
Yeah.
What has it taken for you to channel that and immediately get back to work? Because, okay, let's channel it and go to the next one. What does that take for a head coach to do?
Well, I think it's a great question. And I'm in a different position. So I'm a competitor, but ultimately I'm a teacher. And, like, I've been around the game my entire life. Mm-hmm. And I've seen some of the college basketball's best coaches who hate to lose go through the emotional ups and downs. Speedy Morris and John Chaney, my father, and Steve Lapis. Like, the Big Five when I was growing up was intense. Like, these battles were almost like national championship level, regardless of record. So I've seen, like, you know, the emotional highs and lows. And I've also seen these head coaches wake up the next morning, continue with their routine, but also have a much bigger picture. It's not about them. So I've learned early in my lifetime, you're going to lose. That's part of the game. And now as a coach, I've had all these mentors contribute to who I am as the head coach at Bucknell. It is a competitive game. You are not going to win every one, but you have a job to do, and your job is to prepare your group of young men to move forward and be ready for the next one. And so if there's any saving element in there, it's like, it's not about me. It's not. It's about these players ready to go the next day. And yeah. And there's something that if you really, as the head coach, jump into that world where your players know that you are with them side by side, you know, you can sleep well at night, the few hours that you sleep.
I do have to slip in one quick Speedy Morris story. I'm not going to give you the name of the player because you know who it is, but I'm not going to. Okay, but the audience doesn't. He's coaching women's basketball. Player comes to the sideline taken out. She's crying. Speedy walks up to her. He says, "Why are you crying? Okay, the way you're playing, I should be crying."
Hey, listen, I've had some amazing mentors in my coaching career, and I have some really intense people. So I had Speedy Morris, Jim O'Brien, who was the head coach of the Celtics,
sure. Yep.
Who was the head coach of the Pacers. I mean, the intensity just kind of bleeds out of these individuals. I've been around John Chaney for a large portion of my early career as a player with my father, so I've seen the intensity, but you know, there's a lot of funny stories that come from that stuff.
Yeah. One final question. You get, you know, so much of this is about matchups. Is there some matchup that they bring to the table that if you can overcome it and swing it your way, right, that maybe hadn't been swung your way before, that could make a difference for you?
Well, one of the things that they've done in these other two games is they've shot their 3-point percentage has been very good. So we're going to have to do a much better job of defending the 3-point line as well as limiting their transition points. They play pretty fast, and they're very opportunistic offensively in the transition game. So we're going to have to do a really, really good job for 40 minutes of limiting both the 3-point and transition points. And then on offense, we're going to have to play. You know, you have to play to win. And this time of year, you play to win. You can't play not to lose. And it's very real. This time of year comes with some added pressure. Of course, everyone talks about March Madness and there's all this external noise, but the best teams that I've been a part of, both as player and being a coach, has a group of individuals that are just so confident in one another and confident in the coaching staff and the scheme, and then they play the game. And whatever kind of unfolds throughout the course of the game, they remain confident, and sometimes the ball doesn't go in. But that can't be the determining factor as to whether you're putting yourself in a position to win or lose. So transition defense, three-point percentage defense, and then we're going to have to be an aggressive basketball team.
John, thanks so much for all the time. You gave us a lot of time today. Really appreciate it. Good luck on Thursday night down at D.C.
I appreciate it.
Thanks so much. John Griffin, head basketball coach, Bucknell. Patriot League time as he joined us on the show today, brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, John Griffin's done just an absolutely terrific job in season one. Season one. They've won three in a row. They have the longest winning streak in the Patriot League heading into the postseason. And they get American. They had the same conference record as American. Yes, American won twice very early. But as I think John correctly points out, Bucknell, in terms of cohesion, poise, is a different team than when they played the last time down at Bender. I actually have a Bender Arena story. Todd, you'll love this. Penn State's going to play American. And I had done something the day before, and I couldn't go with the team. So Frank Gardena was doing the games with me at the time. And Frank says, hey, look, I've done a lot because of East Carolina, whatever, and Marshall. He had done a lot of games at American. Okay, great. I'll drive. Fabulous. So we're driving down to American. Okay, downtown D.C. Right? Frank, you know, so bum, 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 no problem. Frank gets us in the city. Bum, no problem. Great, great, great. Bum, pulls right up to the arena, and we're at McDonough Gym at Georgetown. I said, Frank, why are we at McDonough? He goes, what? What are you talking about? I said, that's McDonough Gym. I said, we're Georgetown. He went, what? Gets out, looks. He goes, we are at McDonough Gym. Like, uh-oh. Okay. So now Frank isn't really sure. You can't quite... So we get out, drive a little bit, like we pull over, we ask for directions because this is back in the 90s, right? So this is pre, hey, Google it. This is pre, no, you can't use Waze. we don't have phones at all. So we finally get to the campus. We have to pull over again. Where's the arena? We finally get to the arena. I said, Frank, park the car. I grab the gear and go in. And I walk in there like 12 minutes to airtime. And we're throwing stuff all over the place. I have to get Bruce Parkhill. And so I'm sitting in the end zone, which from the media side, so Doug, you'll appreciate this. I'm going to guess it's still on the same side. You know, 32 years later, I'll guess. But it was in that small set of bleachers in the end zone to the right. I got Bruce. Thanks. I got on the air. Hi, welcome everybody as Penn State takes on American here at Bender Arena. Nobody ever knew. Penn State won the game that night, but it's like, okay. Yep. Frank, this is McDonough Gym. What? I said, this is McDonough Gym, which is where Georgetown used to play. Like, no. I said, yeah. And Frank gets out of the car and goes, oh my goodness, it is.
Oh. I was going to say, I didn't know. I don't think I've ever seen Georgetown in there on campus, Jim.
It's like, holy mackerel. This is not good. Because there's no cars there. Let's start with this. Yeah. There were no cars in the parking lot. That was the tip-off that maybe. it was a slow day, or people don't want to go to the game. I don't know. One of the two.
You could have been really early, too, I guess, right?
We weren't that early. It was like we're kind of fighting the clock a little bit. Oh, my goodness. So, yeah. John won't have that problem. They'll be on the bus. You'll be amazed that when you're with the team, they're, you know.
Well, that, and they can't start without them anyway.
Oh, well, I told you the story about being late to Michigan, right?
Oh, I don't.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. We had an ice storm here in State College, so we couldn't. The game was on a Saturday. The game was going to be Saturday at 1 o'clock, and we had an ice storm, and the plane couldn't get in. So the arrangement was made, hey, look, we're going to get up early the next day. We're going to go, right? So we get up early and have breakfast, but we have to bus to Harrisburg to get the plane, right? So we're sitting there, and Jerry Dunn, he says, I think I'll have another cup of coffee. Or they're like, we got to get going. Like, you know, he's the coach. You can't tell him to go, right? They're like, all right. So, yeah, another cup of coffee, a little bit more to eat, whatever. And we get down there, and we get on the plane. I mean, Todd, we land. We're late. We walk into the arena. It's a 1 o'clock game. We're on at 12:30. Hey, we walk into the arena at 1:45. 1:45. They started the game at 2. I'm like, ugh. And poor Jeff Tarman, who is our engineer, grabs the equipment off the bus, and he's the first guy to run into the arena, and he's got a Penn State jacket on. They are booing him unmercifully. He's like, no. Oh.
Like it was his fault you guys were late?
It was his fault. Oh, so yeah. Yeah, we've been late once, yeah.